happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud 2 Titan. Man, I got a hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a rising star in the making. He is a very talented producer, songwriter, and artist who's also been mentored by Mr. R. Kelly for the past 5 years. Please put your hands together and welcome producer, songwriter, and artist, Denai. What's happening, Denai?
How you doing?
Oh, good, man.
I'm doing great. You know, I'm just happy to be on the show. I appreciate this, the invitation and everything, and it's an honor.
Oh, dude, man, honor's mine, man. True. I love talking to artists, man. I mean, it's all music talk here, and this is what we do.
Exactly.
So, man, you know, starting out, man, I got to say, being mentored by Mr. R. Kelly, man, give me the details from the start, the beginning, how you hooked up with him. The whole nine yards, man, because to me, he's one of my idols musically, man. I mean, he's just been producing hits for years, and to receive that mentorship, man, it's got to be an honor.
Well, let me first say that I feel it's an extreme blessing that I was able to be and still be in a position where I have a friendship with him, and I was able to learn everything that I have learned from him. And the thing is, like, I just didn't learn things just in the studio. I learned things on the road. I learned things as a person. I learned things in the business. I learned things, you know, just even working out, because we work out all the time. So I even learned certain techniques. So, you know, there's a lot to it, more so than just music. But I will say that what happened was, I was living out in Los Angeles, and I was getting things happening out there. I ran into an unfortunate situation trying to help out other people, which, long story short, they ended up robbing me. The people that I tried to help out, they ended up taking my car, put a knife to my neck, stole my contact books, everything, because they wanted that contact, of, you know, the sources that I had at the time. So what happened was, at that particular point in time, my brother and I were, you know, pretty much out in Venice Beach and just doing what we had to do to survive out there, you know, just to eat, like 25-cent Taco Tuesdays, etc., just so I can stay out there to build more contacts and to continue about my path. Because even though things were slow, I still thank God, because I felt like it was all for a purpose. But sometimes you don't know what the purpose is, but I still thank them for whether it's bad or good, because the bad actually might end up being the best thing that happened to you. So fast-forwarding, what happened was, I made a few contacts and things were happening in a positive direction, you know, pretty much as a reboot after that whole situation. And I ended up coming out to Albuquerque, New Mexico. My mother moved down here from Chicago. And so off and on, I'll come out here and visit and, you know, taking the son and get some work done as well. So I was recording out here, getting a few things done. My mother gives me a call and tells me that her friend calls her and says, R. Kelly's down at the mall. And let me back up. You know what the crazy part is this. The crazy part is, like 3 days, literally 3 days to me meeting Rob, Mr. Kelly, I saw an interview of, that they had online. I can't remember exactly where, but it's these two cats out of Chicago, and they ended up meeting up with Rob, R. Kelly, and getting a deal, and then later on got placed on Cash Money. And I remember saying to myself, 3 days prior, God, man, I wish I could have that opportunity. That would be great. 3 days later, I mean, no hype on it, I get this phone call from my mom. So what happened was, at that point, you know, I promoted a lot of concerts. I've done promotions and stuff with a lot of artists. So I've actually promoted in Albuquerque. And I wasn't, you know, familiar with any concerts or anything actually going on at the time. So what happened was that I decided, hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with just going down there just to see. I mean, if nothing happens at all and there's nobody there, then, you know, I can still get something to eat, go, you know, look at a few clothes, whatever.
Right.
So I ended up going down there, and I saw these two tour buses outside the mall. It's called Coronado Mall. And I'm sitting there looking, and I'm like, okay, well, obviously somebody's here. You know, so I walked in through Chelsea Street Bar and Pub and Grill. It no longer exists, but I walked in there, and then I saw, like, a crowd of people at a table and somebody sitting there eating. So I just walked by, you know, and I saw that it's true. You know, R. Kelly was really at the mall. And I was like, wow, there's nothing going on in Albuquerque. There's no concerts or nothing. So I don't know what the scenario is, but I know that they're filming a lot of movies out here nowadays. So I didn't know.
Right.
So basically, long story short, I approached them several times. I let them know who I am and what my intentions are, and I had him, talk to a friend of mine named Gary Glenn, Big G, from a group called Silk. Those guys helped me out quite a bit. Actually, I got two duets with the group Silk. I don't know if you remember them from the 90s.
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm a New Jack Swing pioneer, advocate, disciple, dude. Yeah.
Okay. Those guys are like big brothers to me, man.
Oh, yeah.
And they're great people, too. So, actually, Rob, I say Rob, but R. Kelly, he said, you know what? I'm going to give you a shot. And then I was like, okay, well, let me call Gary so he knows furthermore that I'm not lying about what I say and what I can do and the position that I have worked in, the capacity of the position I've worked in as a promoter and as an artist and everything. So I put them on the phone just so he knows it's real. And then he gave me back the phone. He goes, you know what, man? He goes, he gave me his studio number and his cell phone number. He goes, we'll talk in a little bit. Because at that time, shortly afterwards, me approaching him, because people on the outskirts were thinking, is that really R. Kelly? No, that can't be. What would he be doing here?
Right.
That type of mindset was going on within, the people at the mall. Once the word got out, within 15, 20 minutes, I swear, there was thousands of people. They had to start shutting down the stores just so, he can shop. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So I approached him again. And he goes, he said, what's up? So, bro, I said, well, if you want to go to the movies or if you want to do some basketball or whatever, I got the hookup on basketball out here. My brother was, on the D-League team out here, for the Albuquerque Thunderbirds, for the NBA D-League. And he has a friend named Coach Scar. And he had the connection for getting a private gym. So he looked at me, he goes, yeah. He goes, if you're not bullcrapping and you're serious about this and you can really make these things happen, then I'll spend the time here in Albuquerque as your guest. But you got to take care of me. And if you do that and we have fun, we play basketball, go to the movies, then I'll give you an opportunity that nobody usually ever gets. I'll introduce you to a whole other world and you'll be my guest.
Wow.
So I'm like, wow. I'm like, okay, let's do it. So I started making all the calls. I started making all the arrangements. They go to see that movie, Radio. I don't know if you remember when that came out, like 5.5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Cuba Gooding. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they went down to the movie theaters. It's called the Rio 24. And they went to go see that. And I started setting up the gym. Got the gym. I was excited. Called him up. Actually, he called me. I didn't know who it was at first. And he says, is the gym ready? Is everything ready? And I was like, well, who's this? At first. And then, because I wasn't sure if it was friends or what was going on with people. And he goes, it's me, it's Robert. And I said, oh, yeah, everything's ready. So we get in the caravan, we head down to the gym. And then the general manager that said we can play 24 hours a day at that gym, all of a sudden, there's no employees there. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be messed up for my career. It's not the way to get things started. So my brother made a call to his friend, Coach Scar, that I mentioned earlier. And he's the one that got, what's the name is, a school here in Albuquerque. I forget the name of it right now, but it's a private school. And so he got the private gym. So we all went down there. We had a good time. We played all night long and all that stuff. But then at the end of the night, he asked me if I had a CD. He asked me if I had any information. So I gave him my information and everything that he asked for. And he thanked me for, having a good time here. And he told me he's on his way to Vegas. So when he gets to Vegas, he'll give me a call. So later on, I'm at the studio, and I'm still recording, and I'm excited that I got to meet him. And I actually literally, honestly, was not thinking that there was going to be a part two.
Right.
That's not a judgment on his character, but that's just me accepting the fact that even if that was all what it was.
Yeah, man, I think it's like, just fell into it. It's like, man, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And, I hear you.
Yeah, so it's like, if that's all it is, then cool. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was still great to be in that position, and that inspired me even more to even move forward even harder.
That's
and
right.
Faster. And at the time, that song Ignition was blowing up, right? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So next thing I know, I get a call, and I didn't recognize the number, and I was like, well, he's like, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He goes, where's your brother? I said, he's out playing ball or something. He goes, well, get your stuff together and get ready. You're going to be leaving town. And I said, well, who is this? And once again, this is Rob, man. It's Robert. And I said, oh. He goes, yeah, you're coming to Vegas, and you're going to be my guest at the Billboard Music Awards.
Wow.
Wow. I'm like, wow. So next thing I know, I'm like VIP with the tags at the Billboard Music Awards or R. Kelly. And I'm just like, I'm seeing everybody in the lobby, everybody that was big at the time. You know, some of those people are still big now.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, I'm amazed I'm in that position. You know what I mean? I've thrown concerts and I've done things and I've always been around stuff, but this is a whole different ballgame. And, you know, so I was truly impressed. And he got us our own rooms and everything. And he treated me and my brother out there to Vegas and we had an awesome time. And then we flew back to Albuquerque. And then he said, well, when I get back to Chicago, it might take me 3 or 4 days because I don't fly. I'm only on the bus. I only do the bus. And he goes, I'm going to give you a call. You can be my guest to come out to the Chocolate Factory. I'm like, man, okay, cool. Wow. I'm in. Yeah, you know, shoot. I'm not saying no, I can't spell no. So later on, 3-4 days later, I can't remember exactly how many days later, I get a call. What you doing? Just recording, just working. Where's your brother? You out somewhere? Who is this, man? This is Robert, man. This is Robert. Oh, hey, okay. What's going on, man? Hey, get your stuff, man. Y'all coming out to Chicago. And I was like, wow, what a trip. My whole thing started in Chicago. I'm born and raised in Chicago. And, you know, I lived on the south side. My family's from the south side of Chicago. And then, you know, briefly, I spent a little bit of time on the north side as a kid. And, you know, then later on, we moved out to the suburbs. But I'm from that whole Chicago metropolitan area. That's, you know, so it's weird that I started my journey leaving Chicago all the way out to Los Angeles trying to make something happen, get in a situation where you try to help people. And, they, you know, then, you know, jealousy and greed, you know, takes control of their functions. And then hit rock bottom, fly out to Albuquerque where you never think anything would happen, run into R. Kelly, end up going back home.
Making full circle back to Chicago. Wow.
Yeah. So next thing I know, I'm on a plane and I'm being picked up and I'm at the Chocolate Factory downtown. That's back when he had his studios downtown. And next thing I know, I'm sitting there with him and we're in the studio and he's sitting there writing and producing and doing everything that he does. And I'm sitting right next to him, like, you know, like a foot away from the dude. Watching him create.
Wow.
Long story short, fast forwarding, over the years, you know, our friendship, you know, solidified and, you know, in our mutual my utmost respect. And, you know, he took me under his wing, you know, and during that time, I was, you know, pretty much with him all the time, on the road, when we worked out, you know, in the studio, learning. He would make me get a pad, a paper, in a pen and then listen to his music and why did I do this and why did I do that, why did I change there, why did I write these lyrics, what did you feel like. It was more or less the Mr. Miyagi effect and also a schooling effect, like both techniques. If I had to sum it up, that's how I would sum it up, you know.
Sure.
And throughout the years, you know, I learned everything firsthand right there with him. Now, you know, me, myself as an artist and a songwriter, which he really helped me out with, you know, it was overwhelming. And as a producer, like, I'm not a producer so at the capacity that he is, but I hear music. And I learned that he hears music. And I was doing something that he was doing that I didn't know he did. And that's record everything into his dictaphone.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of confirmed that I was on the right track in a sense, but at the same time, I learned so much more about how he did in this process and how he hears, you know, how he, the music that he hears and how he transforms that or transcribes that to actual music.
Right.
You know, and the thing is that was a blessing because that helped me out a lot. And even when he did not know probably he was teaching me, which he probably already knew. Yeah, I wouldn't put nothing past him. You know that I would
That's
not
right.
put past him. You know, from how, you know, the camp works to the people that you surround yourself with, and to you know, to the people who are actually there for you, or you know, just the whole thing. You know, and he knows by me being there, I was learning all that. You know, and he even told me one day, you know, this is going to happen to me, and things are going to happen, and it's going to happen fast, and you have to be grounded, and you have to be ready to, you know, to continue to work hard. He goes, because getting there is a battle, but staying up there, that's a real chore, that's a real job.
Right.
But it's a job that you love to do, you know what I mean?
That's right.
But he's taught me a lot, and basically what happened was, I'm fast-forwarding again, because I want to take up all the radio time.
But you got as much time as me, man.
Oh, okay, right on.
Yeah, we ain't got no time slot at the producer's corner, man. So whenever you get done.
Oh, okay, cool. Then as long as you guys are enjoying it,
oh yeah,
I'm enjoying it. You
great
know?
Show.
Because for me, it's a flashback, and it's a trip to actually put it back in perspective through words, you know, in an interview, you know, how this thing accumulated and became what it is today, presently. So what happened was everybody pretty much was gone for the Christmas holidays. And, you know, I was still there at the house with him working out in the studio and doing things. And, you know, the staff were down to a minimum at that point because, you know, people, you know, after working so hard, you know, deservedly need their vacation, you know. Mm-hmm. Me, I was in it for the long haul. This is my vacation. I've been living my vacation. So
right.
I wasn't trying to leave. I'm not trying to get a break from vacation now. You know, it's not trying to leave Jamaica because, you know, for any reason, you know what I mean?
That's
you're
right.
Enjoying it.
Yeah.
So the thing is that I'm sitting there, and we worked out. It was just me and him at the gym at his house, and we sat down. And this is after he's been doing all this. I said, Rob, you know, I really want to have an opportunity to crack at making something happen. I said, it'd be good for, you know, for what I'm trying to accomplish, but also my family and the people who support me. And I just want to make you proud. I just want to make you proud. And I'm very sentimental about that. I want to make the dude proud. And if I make him proud, then I'm ecstatic.
Right.
So, you know, so thus begun the time of us in the studio and me recording and writing. And, you know, I must have worked on that song for I don't know how long. And rewrote it I don't know how many times. And also we brought in a guy who was assisting with me inside the studio. His name is De Niro. He's another hot rapper out of Chicago. He's in Colorado Springs, and he's doing his thing right now. And we went to work. Started meshing ideas, thoughts, everything. Rob already did the hook. He already wrote the hook and just kept just going over it, grinding over and over. Finally, boom, the product. So we kind of did the under wraps because, like I said, I was under the Mr. Miyagi effect, you know, whereas nothing was ever good enough. So I kept pushing myself.
Right.
And the first thing I told him, he told me, he goes, if we do this, Denai, he goes, I swear to you, man. He goes, I'm going to be so honest with you. It might be extra brutal. It might be very brutal. He goes, but it's for your own good. I looked at him and I said, Rob, I'll take the criticism like candy because I know it's only good for me.
Right.
And I did that. You know, I didn't care how many times he came in and said, man, that's bogus, or that's horrible, or that's whatever the case might be. You know, whether or not I thought it was good, all that really mattered was, you know, making sure that he thought it was good. You know, because the point is not to have me out there just as any artist, but to come out and be out there and to actually, you know, be a part of the legion of people at the forefront to raise the bar. You know,
that's right,
and not coming out trying to lower that bar. You know, I'm not too good at the limbo game anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what happened was that you know, we went through all that. Then we were in the studio and we recorded pretty much under wraps. He was in the other studio. He has, you know, several studios at the house, and we finished it up. And then I looked at De Niro and everybody at the studio and everybody who was accompanying me, this, you know, the engineers and everything who helped make this happen. And we're like, this is it. We're ready. So I said, okay, let's go get Rob. So we go get Mr. Kelly, and he comes in, and he's sitting there looking very serious. Very serious. Right. And I'm already ready to start over again. You know, I'm already ready, but I'm all for it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You know, it's like having a personal trainer. You know, you can complain because your muscles hurt. Yeah, that's the point. No pain,
right.
No gain.
That's right.
You know, almost, you know, with a reason, you know what I mean? So he comes in. He has a very serious look on his face. Track starts. He sits on the arm of the couch. He puts his head in his hand. You know, like the thinking man pose. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's there just watching. I'm watching him, though. I'm not even looking at the speakers, the mixing board, the engineer. I'm looking at him, you know, just to see what kind of reactions, you know, because right away I don't know if I need to break out that pen or do whatever I got to do, recut a line, whatever the case might be. And then he starts smirking, and he starts bobbing his head. Everybody else is bobbing their head and liking it. And then he starts getting up, and it seems like he's really loving it. By the end of the song, he gave me a big hug. Wow. And he told me, he goes, you did it. That's it. He goes, there's nothing guaranteed. He goes, just because I'm on a song doesn't mean that it's going to be a hit, and there's no guarantees in this. But I feel really good about that, about the song, and that's half the battle. The next step is a video and, you know, getting your face out there and doing all this other stuff. But he was excited, and then we shook hands and everything, and I was like, wow. He goes, but you must be prepared, because things could happen quickly, and it's a responsibility. And also, you know, you got to keep moving and keep grinding, and, you know, and he was basically letting me know that, you know, we're not done. This is far from over, you know, right. Just because we got this song. So I took all that in with excitement, you know, because at the time he told me, this is not Robert, like your big brother, Robert, telling you this. This is R. Kelly telling you this. And that's when it really hit me and sunk in.
Right.
And then he said that, you know, he believes that I'll do really well out there, and I could be, you know, I wouldn't be modest, because I like modesty, but he said basically, to wrap it up, that he believes that I can do very well out there, you know, with the music and just, you know, with me being the artist to push my music in that direction. And, that's what it became, everything.
Man,
then we went through the process of getting it cleared through Sony BMG Drive and everything else, and he helped me throughout the whole process. He came up with the idea of the video. We haven't shot the video yet, but it's in, you know, it will be in the works here shortly, and everything. I mean, then being able to be with him on tour and see the way he does things and the way he does the crowd, and you know, pray before he goes out there. One unique moment, actually, all of the, you know, moments are unique, but one moment I'll take them all, man. But one moment I really sticks with me, man, is when we went to New York City. And, we were at the Radio City Music Hall. And that's where he was performing. I think he did two shows there, or maybe three, too. I can't remember. Too many cities, too many shows, you know?
Right.
But this did, we were there. And I remember during sound check, I walked up to him, and I said, Rob, I said, man, I think it's amazing that you're performing here. And he looked around, and he looked at me, and I said, because you know what this reminds me of? I said, this reminds me of Michael Jackson, man, when he did Man in the Mirror. This is the spot where he's saying Man in the Mirror. And where, you know, to me that was very impactful to see that,
right.
Man in the Mirror.
Yeah.
And you know, even today, for me, if I YouTube it or whatever the case might be, but that's how I remember Radio City Music Hall. You know, that's my moment,
right.
That I wanted to convey to him and how special I thought this was. And then he looked at me, he goes, you know what, I feel the same way, because every time I come here, that's what I think about. I think about Michael on this stage doing Man in the Mirror.
Wow.
You know, but there's so many other experiences, man. He's an upstanding guy. He's an A1. You know, he's been nothing but the best to me. You know, and he's done nothing but help me, feed me, and make sure that everything was all right with me, you know?
Right.
And, man, when God drops you a blessing, he can really drop you a blessing.
Oh, I hear that, man. Well, he's got another dedicated fan over here, man. I've been following his career since the beginning, you know what I mean? So, yeah, man, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, to say the least.
Now, did you get a chance to do any type of recording or jump into any engineering when you're around Rob? Because I know he's pretty into his engineering side, man, for his sound, man. So did you get a chance to work on Pro Tools or Logic or anything?
No, we work on Pro Tools, and I'm familiar with Pro Tools because I use Pro Tools, and at the studio we use Pro Tools there. But he has, you know, some of the best engineers in the game, from Ian to, you know, Dave. I mean, all the guys down there. So the thing is that... you know, it's, you know, I was able to sit there and watch and learn from what they do, you know, and how they move at extraordinary speed and efficiency. I mean, they're the best at what they do, and this is all they do all day, every day. So it was a great opportunity for me, you know, to learn from these guys. But me personally, I mean, I would, you know, slightly engineer my own sessions once in a while if, like, I really, really wanted to get in there. And, you know, and just try to cut something or do something real quick. But currently, you know, everything is Pro Tools, and that's what's being used.
Are you playing any instruments? Piano, guitar?
A little embarrassing, man, but I'll come out and say this. I always wanted to play the sax. So back in junior high, I went to the music director, and I told him I want to play the saxophone, and he told me that at the time, all the sax are taking up the alto, all the sax. He said, but he presented me the clarinet. The clarinet. and he told me it's the hardest woodwind to play. Now, I learned how to play that, you know, became second chair, then later on first chair, but it evolved. Like, you know, music, I play by ear, in a sense. When I get on the piano, I hear things. And when I hear things, I just find the right sounds and I just put them in the right places and do things. Or I get the right people around me who can, you know, pretty much transcribe, you know, what I'm hearing and what I'm doing for, you know, what I'm doing live into, you know, actually what it is. Because sometimes that's even faster.
Right.
So you get the best of the best out there. You know,
oh, yeah.
I mean, kind of like if you look at a lot of these producers nowadays, man, I'm not saying no producers play because a lot of them have musical experience and they're extraordinary. But let's just say like Quincy Jones. Now, from what I saw, you know, from documentaries and the way he does things, he has a solid cast around him. And he tells them, or Michael Jackson. You know, Michael Jackson, reviews and how he goes about his production. You know, he knows what he wants and he knows what he hears, and then you have the right people there to make that happen, or even sometimes even put a twist on it to even, you know, to brighten it up, so even make it, you know, better. But for the most case, it, you know, it's something that you're relaying and that you're hearing in your head like a radio, and you have the right people, you know, put it down on Pro Tools.
Right. No, that's what it's all about, though, man. I'm a player myself. I'm a full-time keyboard player. And, you know, I always tell other players, like, man, you know, there's guys who are just great session players, man, who fit great into a band, really can make your music come alive because they have a foundation to play off of. Some guys aren't great creators at composing and their own music, you know what I mean? But they're a better skillful player if they have a guide or a foundation to be started, man. So, you know, so there's so many different avenues, like you mentioned, that you could get into production and being a record producer versus a music producer. Yeah, so I agree with you.
Yeah, and I also believe that sometimes, you know, you can have people out there who can play Mozart, who can play Beethoven, whatever the case might be. They can really play, but creativity. Along
right.
with technique.
Exactly. I mean, because a lot of it's school. I mean, if you're coming from a classical background, it's like, man, it's structured. But when you get inside funk, man, there's no school for funk other than being around the environment. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, but that creativity, that's what takes it. I mean, let's take like Missy Elliott, for example, when she broke into the scene. That was creativity. You know, just the way she did it versus the way she was, the way she structured things. Sometimes things seemed like it was a little schizophrenic, but that was the art, you know, in some sense. So, you know, shout out to her. I mean, I wasn't, you know, necessarily trying to, you know, put any shout out to people, but I mean, when I think about people who influenced me,
that's good.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people, man, from Bob Marley, I mean, to Earth, Wind, and Fire, to, I mean, the list goes on, man. I mean, from even Kenny Loggins, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Kenny Loggins fan. Man. I'll break his library down for you.
to Kim Waters.
Yeah.
Diana Krall. There's a lot of people. You know, I don't know if I mentioned Stevie Wonder, but, I mean, you know, he's a common influence. And most of all, like I said, from the Radio City Music Hall, when I was telling you about that situation, Michael Jackson.
Right.
I mean, so I'm always drawing and pulling from, you know, either experiences or when I see artists do certain things, you know, that were influential in the game itself.
Right.
Because from what Rob taught me, he never taught me how to be him, by no means. He was teaching me how to be the best me. He
exactly.
said that, you know, the best thing to do is to be a hit. Not just have somebody write one or do one for you, but to be a hit yourself. And that's worth more than $1 billion. You know, and that's what we're after, you know, asserting our position. When I say our, I mean everybody who's been behind me, especially Mr., you know, R. Kelly, and you know, myself included, and making sure that, you know, we move music ahead progressively and positively, and, you know, as far as music subject matter and pretty much the quality of music. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So
just, man, Danai, I got to ask you, man, what's on the musical agenda for 2010? What you got in the works?
Wow. We got a lot of things going on. I'm also working with Michael Ronde Wright, the CEO, owner of Big Shaz Entertainment Music Group, and he has a lot of things going on overseas with me at this point. So that's looking really good out there in Europe and Japan and Canada, and as well as here. For 2010, we're looking at a lot of different shows. We're going to break the song at radio. I believe I can... more than 15 major markets across the country, which will be at the mid of April. So the song will be officially going out there, shooting a video. We're looking at maybe a few months down the line, dropping the second single and the album. And also, this is going to be a marketing plan that hasn't been seen before or done. So it's going to be exciting, man. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of hard work, but shoot, if you're not putting hard work into something, then... you know, you're not really working on anything.
Oh, that's right, man. That's constant grind, man.
Yeah, you know. Then what are you doing? You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely.
So I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to this year. I think this is going to be an explosive year. I think it's going to be, most of all, a lot of fun. And I'm anxious. I love people. So I'm anxious to get out there and see people, meet people, and converse with people, interact with people, and perform, entertain people. I want to do a lot of work with charity, too. I did a song with Silk called You Never Walk Alone, R&B group from the 90s. They're working on an album right now. They're like big brothers to me, and they've helped me. They've been behind me, pushing this whole time, specifically Big G from the group, Gary Glenn. And we did a song. It's from a Roger Hammerstein's play. It's called You Never Walk Alone, and I want to use that, you know, probably somewhere around this Christmas, and I want to donate those proceeds, you know, to children's hospitals, you know, kids who are stricken with cancer or don't, you know, people that need help here in America as well as abroad, you know, for the numerous, you know, causes that are out there. So I'm looking forward to doing that too, because one thing I love about life is putting a smile on somebody else's face, man. And if you can put a smile on all these kids' faces and give them a brighter tomorrow and give them hope and give them something to shoot for, and you know, that could change everything. You know, I had to, you know, be inspired and go through that. I mean, I just told you just a little bit of what happened out in Los Angeles and what I had to go through, you know, being homeless out there, literally. But when I say literally homeless, I'm not talking about, like, although I was homeless, I still washed up, you know, in the bathrooms, and I still brushed my teeth, and,
right. You
know, I still did what I had to do, and, you know, like I said, 25-cent Taco Tuesdays, but I kept my head up. And even then, I still love giving people hope. But, you know, I want to be the living example that, you know, people could aspire within themselves to do, because I was capable of doing it.
That's right. It's a good plan, man. It's going to work, and it is working for you, so just goes to show.
Thanks.
Hey, well, Danai, man, it's been a pleasure to talk with you, brother, man. You definitely got a spot here at the Producers Corner, man. We'd love to have you back, man. Talk about your new musical endeavors.
Oh, thank you very much, man. I appreciate being here. And also, congratulations, man, on your show and its number one positioning and everything that's happening for you. And I'm just so excited that you have me here to be a part of that. And I love it. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you're welcome, much. Man. We'll keep in touch, man.
No problem.
All right, take it easy.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
And a big shout out to Danai coming on the show, man, chopping it up with me, man, and sharing his experience with Mr. R. Kelly. Phenomenal, man. You know, just goes to show you that you just never know when you're going to get that opportunity to display your talents and really show one of your big idols what it is you can do on the music side, man. So again, stay in that grind, man. You never know where you'll end up. For more information on Danai, man, to check out more of his music and what he's doing currently, check out his MySpace page, man. It's www.myspace.com/Danai, and that's spelled DANNANCI, myspace.com/Danai. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well, and that's www.spud2typemusic.ning.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast. So if you go to iTunes, click on the iTunes store, click on the podcast, type in the producer's corner, what's about too tight, click on the image, and you'll have my past and current interviews as well. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at sputtootight@gmail.com. And before I let you go, man, I want to play one of Denai's tracks featuring Mr. R. Kelly, man. The title of the track is called Working Out, man. And I know you're going to dig it, man. So for the remainder of the show, I'm just going to let the track play out, man, and close us out, man, with this banger. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.
Yeah. Woo. Kills. Denai. Friend of the paper boys. Come on.
Baby, I love when you shake it. Tell me where you get that body.
Yeah, I like that thing.
Oh, baby, you're looking so sexy. I can tell when you push it up on me.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. Come on, hands up. Denai's in the building, and I can't deny how I'm feeling. Like Aaliyah, soap, one in a million. No treadmill, you still running the building. You so hot, these other girls are chilling in. You so not like these other girls, you different. She got me froze like the ice on my neck. Gon' make it roll like dice on the bed. Yeah, it's going down and she working up a sweat. Worked the whole body out, she caught the boy both flex. In the gym or up on a pole. Like the dough in my pockets, you got me all swole. So lose control, swerve like an accident. Don't put it in reverse, girl, back it in. I'ma show you how your boy push up. 24's or better when your boy pull up. I'm like,
baby, I love when you shake it. Tell me where you get that body.
You've been working out, girl.
Oh, baby, you're looking so sexy. I can tell when you push it up on me.
You've been working out, girl.
I work you out like yoga. Back to front and fold ya. Lyrically, I got more bars than canola. I got plans for you like Motorola. You got me standing at attention like a soldier. You pushing it up like a bench press. And bouncing them high heel pumps, I'm impressed. Baby girl, so flexible. You only got a couple sets to go. So, make a burn like Cali weed. We bout to burn a couple calories. Then pop them bottles, take a little water break. Shorty bringing more heat than a Florida State. Relax, ma, come and sip this cup. Shots of Patron, pour the hypno up. And I love how you working that thing, girl. Tonight, I just wanna be your personal trainer, cuz
baby, I love when you shake it. Tell me where you get that body.
You've been working out, girl.
Where'd you get that body?
Oh, baby, you're looking so sexy. I can tell when you push it up on me.
You've been working out, girl.
Move your body like you're doing Pilates, mommy. You think it's hot now? Wait till we hit the telly. I keep it hotter than a sauna. I'm all action, designed to put it on ya. So take your pick like a camera. Me or them, baby girl, I got stamina. Number one, two, keep you motivated if you want to. Come back to my place then. I got three or four whips outside. We can dip, and I ain't talking about that exercise. I know you're tired of them set routines. Twerk on me, I'ma be a sex machine. Girl,
baby, I love when you shake it. Tell me where you get that body.
You've been working out, girl.
Oh, baby, you're looking so sexy. I can tell when you push it up on me.
You've been working out, girl.
Ladies, to the telly.